And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is retelling of an old story. Each of my guests is discussing his take on his subject to show how everything old is new again. My second guest is the antidote to CNBC, Fox Business, and Bloomberg. He's the watchdog on Wall Street, and we'll discuss his no-nonsense approach to our current financial and political situations to reveal how everything old is new again. And if you want to join in the conversation, or if you just have a question, you can call us at 639-0008. Chris Markowski is the antithesis of what Wall Street has become. He knows that financial planning is a profession, not a vehicle for selling financial products. He resides in Sarasota, Florida, and provides financial counseling for clients throughout the United States. Chris is the youngest syndicated radio host in the country, and he thrives on being the anti-cliché Wall Street authority. As a consumer advocate, Chris has become known for going after Wall Street crooks and frauds, and he truly believes that his advice can help individual investors make sound financial decisions. Chris's relentless commitment to analyzing the analysts has made him less than popular with some of the Wall Street elite, but certainly inspired him never to be afraid to take on industry giants, corrupt politicians, or subprime lenders and hedge funds. He's the oldest of four boys. Chris is a family man who enjoys creating memories with his wife and their three children and his extended family and friends. Chris's attitudes towards his success, and he relates that to his solid upbringing in upstate New York, where he began working in the family janitorial company at the tender age of 6 years old. Joining us from Florida. Hi, Chris. How are you today?
Very, very well.
Well,
oh my, this is your life. It kind of flashed before my eyes there.
It is. It's the Paul Edwards version of This Is Your Life. So welcome back to the show. Thanks for returning to the show. And I want to dig right into it because this is a story that has both you and I concerned. President Obama states that his primary objective since passing the health care bill is jobs, jobs, jobs. And I would have to say there probably isn't an American out there listening to the sound of our voice that would disagree with that stated objective. Unemployment this past month of November dipped down to 8.6%. Primarily, though, that's because of seasonal hiring and certain job seekers dropping out of the market during the holidays. We still have 13.3 million unemployed persons in the United States. Yet with a stated goal of jobs, 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 actions out of this administration are puzzling. Two in particular run anathema to the president's goals right now. One is Boeing's proposed move to South Carolina. The other is the Keystone XL pipeline. Both projects would mean jobs for American workers. Both projects would improve our national security. So why then is the administration blocking these projects? Chris, give us the history behind the Boeing move to South Carolina and the fight with the National Labor Relations Board.
Well, I mean, it's a great story, and I'm doing a column on it right now. And for lack of a better phrase, the actions of the government, I call it gangster government is what I'm calling it, because they're acting like gangsters. Boeing, most people don't realize this. They are our nation's largest exporter. And, I mean, it's truly something. It's an amazing company that does also not just making planes and involved in various different avenues of business. And they've got this great new best plane in the world, this Dreamliner plane. And they wanted to build a new factory, and they decided to put this factory up in South Carolina. South Carolina is a right-to-work state, and it does not have to be a union shop. Most of Boeing's planes are made up in the state of Washington, where it is unionized. The National Labor Relations Board under Obama decided that they can't do this. All of a sudden here in America, you must set up shop where we tell you you're going to set up shop. You must hire union workers. You must, put that plant back in Washington. And after the plant was built, I mean, this is going to thousands of workers, over 5,000 workers, over $1 billion spent by Boeing to put this plant up in South Carolina. They said, no, you can't do it. We don't want you to put that plant there. We want you to move that plant back to Washington, which to me is just absolutely absurd. Government's argument is that they put it there simply because they didn't want to have to deal with strikes from the unions, which they say is illegal. Boeing's had to deal with strikes in its past. It's, it's obviously cut into their production schedule and caused problems, which can also be a problem in the business that they're in because people expect their deliveries at a certain place and time.
Well, in point of fact, one of the labor slowdowns on the 787 Dreamliner did help to push that Dreamliner 2 years behind schedule from the time they announced delivery to the time it actually delivered. Go ahead with your story, Chris. Sorry.
Yes. No. You're right. You're absolutely right. But you know what in turn happened here is that Boeing agreed to start building another plane in the state of Washington, the 787 aircraft, and all of a sudden, magically, like I said, this is like a gangster. This is like something that's the thug movie. I compare it to Massimo Fanucci from Godfather 2, shaking down the businesses. All of a sudden, the National Labor Relations Board dropped its suit against Boeing in the South Carolina case. Did anything change? I mean, if their case had merit, why did all of a sudden did they drop it after they decided to put up a plant in the state of Washington?
Well,
it's patently absurd.
It sounds like a clear-cut case of extortion on the part of the government. Now, both sides compromised in this, I suppose, to say that both sides got what they wanted to a certain degree because the unionists wanted to have a plant in Washington. They certainly have jetliners being built in Washington. Boeing, I don't know what they're going to do with a $1 billion capital investment sitting on the books. What are they going to do? Write that $1 billion off in South Carolina?
Yeah. They were kind of, like I said, they were the government made an offer they couldn't refuse, I guess.
Well, what does that say about the government? I mean, you call it gangster government. I certainly call that coercion. This is a political year. 2012 is coming up on the presidential election. Democratic support typically has come from labor unions, and this is a clear victory for labor unions in the state of Washington and in the United States. Do you think that those labor union members will be thankful when it comes time to vote at the polls?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the bigger picture in regards to this is, what if, you know, that labor costs are starting to increase precipitously in China? You're starting to see strife there. We've seen enormous amounts of piracy. There's riots that are taking place in certain cities at this point in time for various different reasons. What if, you know, Apple Computers decides, you know what, we want to get out of China. We want to start building more of our products back here in, you know, somewhere else. Would you choose to come back to the United States if you knew that the government could shake you down like that or cause these types of problems? What if you're a foreign company and you got a plant to set up and you're deciding, you know, between Canada or the United States where you're going to put your plant and you saw that situation happen with Boeing? Are you going to think twice about the United States and setting up shop there? Absolutely.
My guest is Chris Markowski. He's the watchdog on Wall Street. We're talking about the Boeing plant and the Boeing relationship with the National Labor Relations Board. Well, here's a differentiation, though. Car companies is a great example, Chris, that you brought up. BMW, a lot of the major car companies are moving to the right-to-work states when they open up their initial plant. And so, in other words, they choose out of the gate to go to the right-to-work states and stay away from what is proverbially called the Rust Belt because of unionism there. So new companies entering the United States who get to choose where they put up their plant automatically have an advantage over existing American companies because American companies are tied to their traditional plants where they've had them in the Rust Belt, and now the government steps in with this National Labor Relations Board move and prohibits them from trying to cut their costs to make themselves more competitive. How is that going to play out on the world stage for American products and American workers?
Well, we continue to drop every single year when they have the competitiveness index comes out. There's a couple of them. The World Bank puts one out. The Heritage Foundation, the Wall Street Journal put one out. And every single year we continue to drop. And it's because of regulations like this. It's because of government interference like this. It's because of our 70,000-page tax code. These are all reasons why we're becoming less competitive as a nation. I mean, Chile is right behind us at this point in time. You know, they could be ahead of us next year.
Well, that's something that we have to watch out for, certainly. My guess is Chris Markowski. Chris, I said at the outset, jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what the administration right now is saying is their number one priority. At least in the case of Boeing, the jobs are going to go to American workers. But that's not the only case. There's another case that's a little bit more current now. That is the Keystone XL pipeline that is being proposed. And that's going to go from the Santars in Canada all the way down to Port Arthur and Beaumont in Texas, and it's going to create a lot of jobs for American workers. In fact, you probably know this, but my listeners may not, 25% unemployment among pipe fitters and pipeline workers in the United States today. They're clearly one of the groups that is most hard hit by this. And it will move that oil to Beaumont, Texas, where we will have control over it, and of course, all oil that we get from domestic production frees us up from having to buy oil overseas. Now, here's the thing. The Keystone XL pipeline is being stopped by environmentalists, saying that it's environmentally not particularly sound and they want more studies, and it's being held up by the president. The Congress, the House of Representatives, has tied the Keystone XL pipeline to the latest extension of the unemployment benefits for unemployed people, and it's going to the president's desk. The president has promised to veto it. With 25% unemployment with pipe fitters and pipeline workers, wouldn't this be an ideal chance for us to put more people back to work and create what the president calls jobs, jobs, jobs?
Oh, absolutely. But you need to understand something. It's unfortunate that I'm sure you understand, but I think America needs to understand that this does not jibe with the tinkering that this administration likes to do with the economy. They are not only so much social engineers, but they're basically, they think that they're economic engineers and how they want to transform and change the country. They're always talking about transforming, changing it. They don't like the way it is. You've got a head of the Department of Energy. You've got Stephen Chu, who came out prior to being appointed to that position saying that he would love for gasoline rates in the United States to be commensurate with what they are in Europe. You're talking $7-$8 a gallon. That's what they want. Cheap oil here in the United States destroys all their plans. It makes their various different investments in companies, which can't even call it an investment. It's a crony socialist type of investment in companies that have no business existing in a viable free marketplace. It renders all of that nonsense moot. We don't need all that stuff. We see it happen now. It was a story this past week. You got a biofuel company that the Navy buys fuel from at $16 a gallon when they can get it. You know, the prevailing rate is $4 a gallon because the government forces them to do so. You know, the last thing in the world that this administration needs is cheap oil.
Wow, because oil at $7 a gallon or gasoline at $7 a gallon is a jobs killer here in the United States. Well, there's more to the story than that, Chris, and let me go on with this, because the Keystone XL pipeline is actually owned by a Canadian company. And as you know, just yesterday, that Canada dropped out of the climate control talks that were first started at Kyoto. They're known as the Kyoto talks because Canada realizes that they need freedom from the Kyoto regulations to develop tar sands. Now, with the XL pipeline hanging in the balance, because this is a Canadian company, they could just as easily turn that pipeline west, head it out to Vancouver, and start selling that oil to China, to Japan, and the Far East. And it's very likely that the people who make those business decisions about where to invest their money in pipelines could easily do that, and we would lose those jobs forever. And those would jobs that would come back.
Absolutely. But not only that, you're just talking about the jobs working, the pipe fitters working on the pipeline. I mean, this is how jobs are created around the country. You're talking about, the people that are supplying the pipeline, the food. I mean, there's so many different things. You know, talk about jobs, jobs, jobs. We talk Boeing 5,000 jobs down there in South Carolina. But the real job creators here in the United States are small businesses. All those small little restaurants and mom-and-pop shops and stores that we see all over the country that add a worker or two here and there. That's what the real engine of job growth here is in this country, and they have no interest in that. Small businesses to them are unreliable. It's difficult to get them all together and make political contributions of any size. And this is where we've gotten to in this country, where it's, often the big companies that get all the breaks that are getting all the deals.
Well, certainly in the last 4 years, the big companies have benefited from that, whether it's the bailout of the banks, whether it is Boeing in this particular case that we're talking about. All of them have benefited mightily from the current administration. My guest is Chris Markowski. He's the watchdog on Wall Street. So, Chris, yesterday I had on a guest who was talking about presidential performance of economic performance over the last 66 years. His name is Peter Cohen. You may have read his articles. I've even been on television shows with him. He asked the question, question, how would you rate President Obama's economic performance? So I'm going to turn it around to you. How would you rate his economic performance? Now, if he took over an economy, let's face it, that was in deep, deep doo-doo, and at any other, it's been as bad as it's ever been in this country since the Great Depression. However, if President Obama's presidency ended tomorrow, how would he rank, say, against the other presidents from, say, Truman on?
Well, I think he'd, you know, as far as, you know, like I said, you can read as much history as you can, but you're kind of obviously stuck in the time frame that you've been alive. I've never seen it, you know, worse than this. And, you know, people are constantly talking about the situation that he was in, the situation that he inherited. We had a market crisis. We had a credit crisis where banks didn't want to lend to one another, which was taken care of before he got into office. Of course we're going to have, when you have any type of bubble in the economy, whether it be the dot-com bubble that George W. Bush had to deal with when he took office, or the real estate bubble, there's going to be some blow-off from that. But every single remedy that they presented itself there didn't make matters better, it made matters worse. I mean, you could go back, you could take a look at the president telling people not to go to, you know, Vegas on conventions, or helping people try to stay in homes that they can't afford, or cash for clunkers, or the stimulus package, or the health care bill, which was, I mean, we need health care reform here in the United States, but we most certainly don't need another entitlement program at this juncture, nor could we afford it with all the other messes that we have go on. One catastrophe after another, trying to, once again, to micromanage the world around us, micromanage the free market out of Washington, D.C.
Well, that's tragic. So let me turn the tables on you. I'm going to elect you president for a day. You're going to be an omnipotent president. But what is it going to take, President Chris Markowski, for us to get the U.S. economy to pull out of the doldrums that we're in?
The thing I would do is very simple. Everybody has to be equal under the law. We're a nation of laws, not of men. Thomas Jefferson talked about all men being created equal. We're not. We see Congress can do all sorts of insider trading and not do any jail time that we would do about a decade for. You see a tax code at 70,000 pages long that puts certain companies and certain businesses ahead of everyone else. It has to be the same for everyone. Equal under the law. Reform the tax code. Do away with all this harmful regulation. Force Congress to vote on regulations. So if, you know, the EPA says, you know what, carbon dioxide is a pollutant. Really? Let's vote on that. Because that's what we have these legislators there for. They want to declare carbon dioxide a pollutant, it needs to be voted on, because that's most certainly going to affect our economy. Getting out of the way is something that we need. We have to shrink the size of government. I would start by doing it via attrition, not hiring any new workers. That's it. We're on a government hiring freeze. Double up. Work harder. And we move forward from there, slowly but surely chipping away at the entitlement program, Social Security and Medicare, because those have to be dealt with as well.
Smaller government is always the key. Tax reform, definitely a key, without a doubt. My guest has been Chris Markowski. He's the watchdog on Wall Street. Chris, you've got a lot of great things to say, and you say them on a regular basis, both in print and on the air. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your writings, your radio show, etc., where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Just go right to our website, watchdogonwallstreet.com. It's one word, all sorts of free goodies and giveaways, our show. You can listen to it there. iTunes as well. Everything at watchdogonwallstreet.com.
Watchdogonwallstreet.com. Chris, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much.
Take care.